This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And the under-23s beat Southend Unit D. That sounds like a warehouse.
Yeah, because if you go past the ground, the E is falling off United. Oh, really? So my kids always call them Southend.
Are they actually called Unit D?
D?
Oh.
And we don't have a 23s, it's 21s. Why are we playing 23s?
Is that a new thing? Put that there?
Just for friendlies.
It was just on the web page. Right, we ready to go then.
What about Mateta? Let's discuss it. No, I'm joking.
No, please, Mikey, please. That's several YouTube shows.
I'm very tired about someone who's so overrated.
Yeah, I am too.
Very overrated. I'm just tired, man. He just like, yeah. All right, let's go.
Yeah, just go when you're ready.
This one's going to the podcast awards, by the way.
Podcast awards. Jeez. I haven't had breakfast. I barely had water. So trust me, I don't know what awards we're winning with this. I'm just going straight away talking about the game. But it's fine. Let's go.
I've just seen you have a bit of water.
Taking it. I barely had any water. I barely. Oh, my days. Let me catch a break. You guys are all... Anyways, let's just start.
Didn't you have any half-time oranges when you were manager? Didn't you make oranges, cut them into segments? That's what managers do, isn't it?
You guys are telling me to start. When I want to start, we're talking about oranges and water.
How do you think Chris feels when
this is why he's not on.
He's in San Francisco, isn't he?
Know. All right. Anyways, Palace, eh?
What? Let's go.
For fuck's sake. I'll literally say welcome. All right, let's go. Welcome. I'm just expecting Mikey just to do something. I just don't trust him. All right, he's not going to do anything. That's fine. Welcome to the Match Report podcast. It's me, D, and we'll be talking... No, we're not. I want to start again because Hambo always does it. I want to be like Hambo.
Don't forget, we're back of the nest. That's quite important, that bit, the back of the nest bit.
Yeah. Writing up 2-1 now. Brian just scored again.
Hello, welcome to Back of the Nest. I'm Nick, and I'm joined by D and Patrick. D, you're a bit late. Why were you late, mate?
I don't know what's going on. Are we
going? Well, I've just kind of...
Patrick was talking, so I didn't want to talk over him. But you decided to start the show when you talk about Brighton, which I don't know if that will appeal many Palace fans, but let me start this now. Welcome to the Match Report podcast. It's me, D, and today we'll be talking about Crystal Palace's 0-0 draw. Welcome to the Match Report podcast. It's me, D, and today we'll be discussing the 0-0 draw against Newcastle at St. James's Park. I've got a very special panel. We'll be talking about VAR, subs, Jordan Ayew as a number 8, and more. So let's get right into it.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
So, as I've mentioned, I've got a very special guest. I'll start off with Nick first and foremost. Nick, I know you've been going through a lot in your personal life, but it's good to see you back on the podcast. To be fair, I've never been on the podcast for the last 2 seasons. So it's the first time I'm here as well. But how have you been lately? How's your...
Yeah, everything's good. Everything's good on the road to fitness. I don't like this watching football on the telly rather than being there, but hopefully by December, January, I shall be at away games again, moaning at you for leaving too late. and not adding an hour or two to what it says on Waze, because things might happen in the future that Waze can't predict. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. Will was complaining he's missed the away days and he hasn't seen Uncle D for a while. So,
look, you've basically had an ACL injury. You're making a comeback. You'll be back.
Yeah.
Just like many other players. Just like Eze. You're Eze. You're back with that.
Eze.
Patrick, long time no speak. That's a lie because we speak literally every single day. I'll probably speak to you more than my own family. I'll ask you how you're doing, but I already know how you're doing. You're moaning about strikers, you're moaning about transfers. But apart from that, you love playing golf. And talking about golf, I was thinking about that on my way back home before we recorded this. Golf is an old man sport, isn't it? Because I've realised no young footballers or young, you know, professionals play golf. Am I right in saying that?
You couldn't have been more wrong. Every professional player that you know, everyone you know plays golf. Harry Kane plays golf. Jason Puncher plays golf.
Well, to be fair, he's about 30 years old, in his peak of his career. Jason Puncher in career over, so not really.
Dean, you're still young enough. You're still young enough to think 30
years old. Declan
Rice
plays golf.
Oh, he does? Oh, fair enough. That's good.
Christian Pulisic plays golf. I mean, it's not old man.
Okay, that's interesting.
I didn't say I wasn't old, by the way. I'm just saying everyone who plays golf isn't old. I didn't say I wasn't old, though, but...
Average age of golf for me, I was just thinking along the lines of 40 to 45. But let us know what you guys think anyways whilst listening to this. Maybe I might be wrong. That's what I thought. But
as most topics you talk about, you obviously are wrong. Again, I still play football, but running around is very tiring. So I much prefer just walk on the golf course. It's much easier. It's not an easy game to play. It's just an easy game to participate in.
Yeah, it's just an easy game to play. You know, football, you were struggling
it's
with.
Not
you told
easy.
Me about
I
this.
Bet you could never play golf, mate.
That's why you're playing golf right now. But look, enough of golf chat, because we've got a 0-0 draw to talk about. But before we do, let's just talk about Palace news this week. The under-18s beat Brighton comfortably 3-0 in the Premier League Cup. In a match, back of the Nest, own Sam Hesketh described as great fun to watch. Patrick, you also watched that as well. The under-18s topped the group with matches to play against Sheffield United and Leeds. What have you made of the under-18s so far this season? It's been positive.
Yeah, very good. I've enjoyed it. Setup is similar to what we play in the first team, 4-3-3. We don't play a back 5D. You'd be happy about that. But the wing-backs are very good. I want to shout out Heskey's favourite player, Vontae Williams, the left-back. Very quick, very technical. Scored a great goal yesterday.
Is that the one where he kind of cut in from the halfway line?
From the halfway line, yeah, and ran halfway.
Ran all the way through, dribbled around a few players in the box and then tucked it home.
Yeah, brilliant player. Kalani Barton, the other right wing back, or right back, sorry, very good. The other player I want to mention is Adlan Nascimento, player we got from Peterborough. He was a U16 last year, so obviously he's a U17 now. I think he's too good for the 18s. But yesterday, he scored two great goals. He plays on the, funny enough, on the left side where Wilf plays. He's like a, very similar to where Wilf plays. He's a really good player. I think he'll be in the 21s very, very soon. And he'll be in the first team soon because he played for Peterborough first team when he was 16 years old. So, but yeah, I was very, very impressed with them. They're off to a great start. They topped the group. The top seven teams in the group make it to the next round. It seems like it's the FA Cup or League Cup. And right now, they're off to a great start, the 18. So, looking forward to much more from them.
I'm hoping that the documentary starts to cover the under-18s because it's done a lot of the younger kids. Have you been watching it, D?
No, I haven't.
The Academy documentary. It's really good.
Look, in all honesty, I haven't even had breakfast before recording this. I've barely had any water, so I've got chest infection. I'm basically struggling right now. I'm struggling. I don't know how I'm recording this podcast. I've got 5% left of myself, but yeah, I've got literally zero time to watch the Academy football because I spent majority of my time arguing with Patrick about strikers, and that's why I'm ill at this rate.
We're not doing that today.
But look, there's also another positive result. The under-21s beat Tottenham 3-0, hat-trick from John Kiermani Gordon. And Gordon's been one on the radar for a while now. I think many people who watch the Academy, they know his talent. They have high hopes for it. But Patrick, do you think him playing for the under-21s, scoring a hat-trick, that he has the skill set? Is he ready for maybe first team sub appearances or being on the bench? Or is it too early to tell right now? Because he has been performing decent.
He's been great. I think he's got 7 goals in like 4 games. The problem with him, he's been injured a lot, D. He's only 20 years old. He's 19, 20. He's young still, but he's following in the footsteps of, you know, well, actually, we've got a lot of decent strikers in the lower, in the lower. We've got, you know, Junior Dixon in the 18. We've got Kamani Gordon. We've got Adebomi. We've got Akinwale all in the 21s. I mean, the future looks bright. Is he ready for a first team? I'd like to see him train with the first team because I think I give him good experience. I don't know if he'd be good enough to honestly get involved in the first team on the bench, but I mean, who knows what Vieira's thinking right now. But I like him as a future player. I think he's got a very bright future.
And all it needs, yeah, go on, Nick.
Sorry, all it needs is an injury, isn't it, for one of our strikers? Because, okay, we can count Wilf as a striker, kind of. But if either Mateta or Edouard get injured, we might be struggling. So it might need to call up one of these youngsters. Also, it's good to see that we are second and there's a bit of a gap forming. So we're just behind Arsenal on goal difference. Well, even on goal difference, we're the same. So we're behind Arsenal alphabetically. So who'd have thunk that we'd have under-18s in the top two or three of their league and the under-21s going really well? Not since the days of Steve Coppell have I had as much excitement about the youth team. I know you used to go and watch them, Patrick, didn't you?
Yeah, I watch them all the time. I mean, definitely. I mean, right now, with the facility we have, the coaching, there's never been a brighter time for our academy. And I really hope that, as Dee said, is Kamani Gordon ready for the first team bench? Probably not. But I really hope that we start seeing a little drip and drabs of some players getting chances, because I think some of them really deserve it. And I think now that the loan window is closed in general for players to go out, I'd like to see, players who don't necessarily have that chance to go out, at least get some first team, training experience and or on the bench so they can hopefully push on, if not this year, then next season.
Yeah. Look, last bit of news, Rob Street. He's gone out on loan to Shrewsbury Town in League One, I believe. And David Boateng has joined Queen's Park in the Championship in Scotland. So we've got youth players going out, getting experience as well. So we'll see with them in terms of how they develop, because there's a few players that unfortunately won't make it from the academy, despite how good they have been in the academy, because the Premier League is just different gravy. It doesn't mean they're bad players, but they might not be ready for Premier League football. So especially Rob Street is one player that I'm looking at as well in terms of his development. I'm not too sure if he could be Premier League striker. I think he could do a decent job in lower league levels. Hopefully goes Shrewsbury Town, smashes it there and finds himself a home where he can grow himself as a player. Because that's the most important thing. If it's not at Palace, we need to make sure they find other teams as well. But before we quickly go into the Newcastle game, make sure to subscribe on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and also leave us your reviews right after the show. It really helps us out and it only takes about a few minutes of your time. So that will be fantastic. Now, enough of Palace news. Let's get into the game. Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle 0, traveling to St. James's Park after the disappointing Brentford draw. There was lots of people frustrated after that point. But look, going into this game, we always knew it was going to be difficult. You know, we've seen with Newcastle, their spending and the amount of players that they've brought in, their quality side. St. James's Park is one of the most difficult places to go to in terms of atmosphere as well. They're up for it as well. And also, as away fans, travelling up St. James's Park, it takes another 20 minutes to go up them stairs. So it's not easy for no one involved, in all honesty. But look, how I see it is that it was a good point away from home. There was some solid performances from Vicente Guaita and Cheick Doucouré. For me, I feel like them two players stood out the most. But for you, Nick, how did you see that game? How did you see that game overall? Was you impressed with the point? Was you disappointed with the performance? Because for me, the performance wasn't great, but I also respect the point based on the performance, because that could have gone horribly wrong. And in fact, we could have been out of the game in the first half if Newcastle took their chances. So we're actually very lucky in a way to come out with a point and a clean sheet, which sounds ridiculous.
Just thinking about it now, I think we were a little bit scared of them. I don't think we played our game. When we play our game and take teams on, we're a lot better. I mean, look at Newcastle against Manchester City. Perhaps we did that because Newcastle were brilliant at getting the ball out wide to the wings and steaming forward. And you've got the new players like Isak, who I thought was called Isaac for years and years and years. You know, you're facing that as a young defender, and this is one of the best strikers in his age group. You're going to be fearing that. You're going to be fearing Almiron, who always seems to score against us. The way you've got to see it, though, is if we look season upon season, last year, okay, we played them the week after the semi-final when we were disappointed that we lost to Chelsea. And We played out and we lost 1-0. It was a pretty close game, but it was a bit dull. Yesterday's game was very, very exciting. We played an improved Newcastle without us being much more improved and got a better result than we did last year. So that, for us, that is progress.
Exactly. And that's a very good perspective, because when we last faced Newcastle, they were doing fantastically. Since Eddie Howe has come in, since January, really, till up until now, they have been a very good side. And it's sad that even Manchester City, they went to St. James's Park recently and they couldn't beat Newcastle. In fact, if Newcastle held themselves for, you know, a 5-10 minute period of the game and Manchester City wasn't just ridiculous and scored 2 goals in 4 minutes, then Newcastle could have potentially be one of the best sides in Europe. So it's never an easy place to go to. But Patrick, for you, we discussed it yesterday on a match reaction show on YouTube. We talk about a lot about Palace, and you was on the same line as well in terms of happiness. But in terms of the actual performance, where do you think it actually went wrong? Because there were people mentioning that it was Roy Hodgson-esque, which I don't agree with, because I feel like we had a game plan and we just couldn't execute well, especially in the first half. There were many times the ball was going to Eze and the likes of even Ayew or Wilf, where they were just too slow to react to it. And Newcastle just wanted it more. We were just too slow off the pace. And that doesn't go down to the game plan. That's just the execution from the players. That's how I saw it. But for you, where do you think it did go wrong in terms of performances? Because we gave away some sloppy chances as well. And if it wasn't for Vicente, in the first half, that could have been at least 2-0. At least.
Right. Well, I think one of the keys was that Eze and Wilf just didn't get into the match. I think we all know that we need both Wilf and Eze to be on their game. If they're not on their game, we're going to struggle. Obviously, we didn't start Olise, so you're relying then on Mateta and Ayew. Well, obviously, that's not what they're doing. They're going to do stuff that helps the team, but they're not going to create chances. So I think that was one of the biggest issues. But from the eye test, watching the game, yes, Newcastle had a lot of chances. But I watched the post-match interview with Anderson at the end of the game, and he was talking about how their set pieces is something we were really concerned about. They had 13 corners to our 5 yesterday.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, we knew what their danger was. You know, Trippier's delivery is very, very good, very dangerous, and they had some dangerous free kicks. But looking at the stats, I mean, accuracy and passing was very even. Possession was very even. Shots were close. I mean, they had 19, we had 15 shots. It's not like the stats would say, oh my gosh, they killed us. But obviously, they had the better chances. They definitely had the better chances. Guaita was very good. But looking back again, I'm watching the game real now. We had two or three really good chances. But Mateta and Edward had shots that Pope made excellent saves on. He just did. So you have to respect the fact that, one, you're playing in a very hostile ground. You guys have both been there at Newcastle away. And again, a point and a clean sheet to me is a very positive thing to take from it. And as you just said, there's improvement on last year's performance there as far as getting a point. We didn't get there last year when Aaron scored. But yeah, yes, we could have lost the game. And we can talk about the Mitchell goal in a bit. But as far as the own goal, but as far as performance-wise, it was nowhere close to being hostile. We did not sit back and try to counterattack. We tried to play our game, but our two best players, attacking-wise, weren't up for it. But defensively, we played really well. So from that standpoint, I'll take the performance for what it was, which was a well-earned away point.
Yeah. Look, when we're talking about attacking players not being up for it, there were times where the ball was going to them and they didn't really switch on. There were moments like that. But also, I don't know, I wonder what you guys think about this. I don't know about us playing up from the back, especially against Newcastle. I feel like at times when it went to the right back, Joel Wood, and this is me looking at handpicking small things, it just seemed like under pressure, he just kept booting the ball up there and we just didn't have any proper football going on, how we see under Patrick Vieira. At times we isolated the midfield, and when the midfield was involved, it was with Cheick Doucouré. But maybe that's me just too much looking into it. And as I mentioned earlier on in the show, Joachim Andersen losing the ball to Isaac. You know, thank goodness for Vicente Guaita being in goal. And talking about Vicente, let's quickly talk about him. He's been not under pressure, but he's had a few moments where people were talking about, should he be a number one? Sam Johnson, he should potentially start for us. For you guys, Vicente once again proved his worth yesterday. How do you see his future at Palace going forward? Because he's got 1 year left in his contract. And if he performs like this, then, I mean, there's nothing wrong with his performance. That's what you want from a goalkeeper. Do you think Palace are going to be in an awkward situation when they're looking at a goalkeeper in his mid-30s who might want maybe a few-year contract, maybe 1 or 2 year contract, and us as a football club, would we be willing to offer that with the current process that we're going at? Vicente had a great game yesterday. So quickly, your thoughts, Nick, on Vicente's performance and his future going at the club? Because if he keeps performing like that, then that's great. I mean, that's what you want from a goalkeeper. But then again, does he align with the club's values in terms of bringing in younger players?
Yes. He had the best game that he's had so far for Palace yesterday, I think. Okay, there was a little bit of help from Doucouré. When he made that brilliant save down to his left, palmed it out, and then Doucouré, the way he scooped the ball out, the way he stopped Isaac's, tried to deftly flick the ball over his head, didn't he, when he was one-on-one after Anderson's mistake. He was on that. He was leading. He was getting crosses. He was punching the ball out. All the things we said that he needed to work on, he is getting better. Now, where he needs to improve, and it's not, well, maybe not, but he's kicking under pressure. Kicked the ball out quite a few times. In fact, I thought they were having a bet on how many throw-ins there were going to be in a match, the amount of times the ball went out. But as you said, no, it wasn't only Ward that was pressured. Newcastle was so quick to be on the player with the ball, and we just didn't know how to deal with it. And we've had that with a couple of other teams, haven't we, Patrick? Sorry, you've got something to say there.
No. It's just these point about the goalkeeper and Vicente. He's 35 years old, 36 in January. There's no way we're going to keep him for next year. There's no chance. I didn't realize, just looking at the stats, that both Butland and Johnson, they're the same exact age, like 15 days apart. They're 29. There's no doubt we'll bring back Johnson and Butland for next season. Guaita deserves to get a free transfer. If he wants to go back to Getafe or to Valencia or wherever in Spain, he's more than welcome to that. But I can't see him coming back. Having said that, he was brilliant yesterday. And as long as he keeps doing what he's doing, he'll keep the first team shirt. But honestly, if Johnson pressures him to do it, it only makes both of them better. And it makes us as a club better. So I don't see any way that we sign Vicente on the contract. We've also got, you know, young goalkeepers in our academy in Whitworth and Goodman who deserve a chance, if not to be backups. You know what I mean? So I don't see any way we sign Vicente on the contract. Honestly, at 35, 36 in January, I don't see it happening. But again, he was really good yesterday. Going to the other point, you're talking about playing at the back D. That's who we are now. That's our DNA. That's Crystal Palace. We're not going to change that. The play by Anderson was a silly play. I just watch it now. Isak closed him down at the halfway line. He tried to play the ball wide. It was knocked down. It happened. Thank God. Again, Vicente was there. What I did notice yesterday, that I didn't see any long balls from from Gehi and Anderson to either IU or Wilf. So that might have been a game plan thing where we're not trying to play the ball long necessarily, but trying to keep the ball. But as far as playing from the back, listen, man, that's how we have to play. Everyone plays that way in the Premier League. We have to play that way. It didn't work yesterday, but I think that's something we're going to continue to do, whether it works.
Yeah.
We have a problem on that.
I 100% agree. And in all honesty, you have to give credit to Newcastle as well, because they were very good with their pressing. But it also shows that if you're not on your A game, we will struggle as a team. The likes of Eze.
I agree.
Yesterday, I don't think he was the normal Ebbs that we've seen so far this season. He was a quiet at it. Well, he's been asked. D. Yeah.
A couple of times Eze got the ball and he went for a run and he got tackled straight away. Now, I don't know whether that was Eze not being on the ball enough, knowing what's going on around him, or whether it's other players not letting him know that there's a man on. You know what I mean? Is there that communication on the pitch? It's just a fault. I don't know whether it's true or not. Or was Eze just having a bad game?
Look, you have to realise that it's coming back from an awful injury. And the way that he has come back from that injury, he's performed fantastically in terms of production. And people were talking about it on deadline day that we need another midfielder because we've lost Conor Gallagher and haven't replaced him. In my personal opinion, I don't think we've directly replaced Conor Gallagher, but Eze's influence in midfield, the way that he plays, carries the load in terms of productivity. I mean, Conor Gallagher's a brilliant off-ball presser, but for me, Eze's playmaking is much better than Conor Gallagher's. That's why you've seen that so far this season, Eze's already got 3 big chances created and Gallagher last season only had 5. So it would have been fantastic to have Gallagher and Eze in the midfield. And of course, there's that debate. Is Jeffrey Schlupp good enough to start in midfield? There are some games where he's better suited. Yesterday's game, I didn't quite understand his role. At times, he was a bit quiet for me, for my liking. You know, Ebbs has been fantastic, and there will be games like this, Nick, because he's come back from an awful injury. He's getting used to first team football. I don't think he was great against Brentford, for example. And in this game, he wasn't as effective as well. But I know that this isn't as straightforward as, you know, as some people make out to be. Yes, he's had some good performance. He'll have some quiet games as well as he gets back to full fitness. He hasn't had a full season under him yet. We have to realise that he came towards the end of last season, started this season as well. And right. Now he just has to build that match fitness and get used to it. So, you know, as it shows the impact that he has on the team, really. Because if Ebbs has a quiet game like he did against Newcastle and Wilf does, then you know that our attack is really, really disjointed.
But it's interesting that... It's interesting though, you've got Elise, who's a very, very similar player. I don't know who you'd say was different, but when he came on, and I know I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but we looked a different team when he came on.
Yeah.
Now, who's the better out of the two, Elise or Eze?
Well,
and are they similar or are they different?
Well, we'll talk about subs later on in the show. We don't want to go into that topic just yet. We'll talk about subs later on in the show. But yeah, as I said, the first half, it could have went horribly wrong. Vicente saves us. And then in the second half, there were no subs. What did you think? Well, it's to the start of the second half, anyways, at halftime. What did you guys think about that decision after the first half performance? Do you think Patrick Vieira told the players you need to go out there and show that you can actually play football? Was he frustrated? Was it a point for players to prove to Patrick Vieira? Was you guys surprised about no subs at halftime?
I personally wasn't. It's a 0-0 game. We hadn't played that poorly the first half. So I didn't really see the need for changes unless it was an injury. I don't really think, you know, you've got the five subs now system now. You can always make those changes if you feel like you need to. You can make mass changes, you know, half your team basically if you really want to. I think the decision to leave the players that were out there second half was fine. I did see a little bit of I was watching the game, obviously, and the commentators made a comment. When I think Ian Dowie was on co-coms. He made the comment that we were actually dominating for periods before the substitution and right after. Coming to the game a bit more because of it. So I think the decision not to make the subs was fine. Had we been trailing at halftime, I'd been up for more subs or a sub or two. But at 0-0, honestly, I think that was a good decision not to make the subs. And I think, looking back on it, the subs that he made at that time really, really helped us.
And that's
as far as like put pressure on Newcastle.
And that's going to be a topic that we're going to talk about. The way that we started the second half, especially defensively, Newcastle was still applying pressure onto us. We were still in that same predicament where we couldn't really attack with the ball. Wilf was isolated going forward. As I mentioned, Ebbs wasn't that great. But I felt like Jordan Ayew had a solid game. And when we talk about subs, we'll talk about Jordan Ayew more detailed there.
I thought Mateta did quite a good job of holding the ball up as well in a difficult... In difficult circumstances. I mean, the last 20 minutes of that first half, I was almost behind the sofa watching it, you know, between my fingers. And in a way, it's a bit of a surprise that we didn't change it because, like you said, the first 10 minutes of the second half were pretty much the same thing. So having been under the cosh so much, I don't know what he thought they were going to do differently with the same personnel.
Look, we won't talk about Mateta versus Edouard on this show because
we've done that many times.
But for me personally, where Mateta showed himself was more defensively rather than going forward. He had that chance in the first half with that header from a corner. I don't know if you guys realise, he was just wide open and maybe he could have took a touch and finished it off like that, but he just headed it straight to the goalkeeper. He had that shot as well at the edge of the box where he just went directly to the goalkeeper. But you have to give credit to Mateta where it's true as well, and that was with his defensive style of play, which is where you go to Roy Hodgson-esque territory in terms of strikers being solid defensively. But yesterday, Mateta put on a solid shift. He ran back a few times, got the ball off the Newcastle players, and that's where his strengths were. But as the game was going on, Nick, I don't know if you noticed it, but you can tell that Mateta couldn't do that for 90 minutes because we had to have some form of attack going forward because it was just getting too easy for Newcastle just to attack us onto it. And when you have your striker just constantly dropping back and trying to win the ball back, that's when you know something was going wrong.
Yeah. But he's got to be back for defending because we haven't got the tallest of teams. So that's the reason he's back there for corners and whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it still frustrates me that Wilf's not standing on the halfway line and taking three of the opposition players out to look after him. But, you know, I noticed that against Brentford too.
Yeah, but so Patrick, I believe you mentioned about set pieces, and let's talk about set pieces because Newcastle, how many corners did you say that they had? They should have had more than 10. I think it was 13. I'm not too sure on it. Precise number, but Newcastle had a lot of corners in this game. And we saw in the first half, Vicente saved us. Surprise, surprise. Once again, with Cheick Doucouré clearing it off the line. But in the second half, it wasn't actually a corner. It was a set piece. And it was a free kick going into the box, I believe, with the Tyreek Mitchell situation. And it got overruled. Newcastle scored. Well, Newcastle didn't score. We scored our own goal. And it went to VAR and it got overturned. So, taking off your Palace hats now, was that the right call? And would you have been happy if that was Palace on the other side, as in Newcastle position, and that got overturned for us? Patrick, I know you wasn't too happy yesterday, but now that you've looked back at it, do you think VAR got it wrong?
What do you mean I wasn't too happy? I thought VAR made a mistake. I mean, the angle that I saw on TV, the first angle I saw, was a push by Mitchell into his back, into Willock's back, and then momentum takes Willock into Guaita. Now, he makes contact, it looks really poor, and then when I watched the replays they were showing in VAR, I didn't see that same angle, so maybe the referee didn't see it. I thought it was a poor call. If that happened against Palace, I wouldn't have been, you know, I mean, if a goal got overruled, for any old Palace goal, I'm not going to be happy, but I thought it would have been a fair call. I thought it was a bad call. I really didn't think it was a good call. Looking back on it, I mean, people have been talking about it. People said, well, Willock's momentum was taking him into the goalkeeper anyway. I'm not sure if I believe that, honestly. I really think that thing. And also, I like to look at the reaction of the players. I didn't see Mitchell get upset when it was called. I didn't see any of the players go to the referee and say it wasn't a push. After the game, I saw Anderson interview. He said he wasn't sure about it. The other said he didn't see. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't. If it was so obvious that he didn't push him, I didn't really see a lot of reaction at the time to say it. So I thought it was a bad call. Listen, that's just me trying to be totally unbiased. I thought that Newcastle got robbed. And if that happened to Palace, I'd be really upset. Nick, not as upset as Newcastle fans have come across on social media, but I would be upset.
Nick, Patrick basically said what Eddie Howe said after the game, but Patrick Vieira also had this say, and he was saying that it was the right call. So where do you stand with the VAR decision?
I haven't seen the... I've seen the other angle that Patrick talks about where it appears that... he's pushing. However, I've only seen in slow motion, which is very, very difficult to judge. If I saw it at full speed, I'd be able to make a decision. The fact is, VAR was there to get rid of controversy, and it hasn't. In fact, it's got worse.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the clear and obvious errors were things like who was the Arsenal player who got misidentified and sent off?
Oh, that was back in the day, Oxlade Chamberlain. And
I thought that's what VAR was for, so they could look for things like that, not measure offside to the blooming millimeter. Everton was so unlucky yesterday, although I cheered it because it's Frank Lampard and I hate him, so I was quite happy at that. And yes, I was happy at the fact that it was wrong yesterday, because them's the breaks. Sorry, Newcastle, but that's football. And in a way, we were a bit worried that the ref getting things wrong and the controversy and the talking points that you remember for years and years and chat about down the pub or wherever it is you talk about football. VAR, we thought, was going to get rid of that. And I was bemoaning that. And actually, it's made it even better, because some of the calls, ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, it's what football is now, and it's a shame that you do feel sorry for the fans when they've celebrated, and you get the when it's kind of disallowed, and you lose the spontaneity.
Yeah, for me, looking at it at the time, there was a contact, but it's a contact sport. For me, did Mitchell push him that hard for him to fly into Vicente Guaita? I guess he did, but then another side of me is thinking, well, he's jumping for the header. Even if there was minimal contact, I guess Mitchell could still push him onto the goalkeeper, so that could still be a foul. Look, end of the day, we got very lucky. There was many instances where we got lucky and we saved with individuals saving us yesterday. And we mentioned this at the start of the show. And sometimes you need that luck to have a successful season. Against Brentford, well, I don't think we got unlucky. I thought it was our own fault why we conceded. But in this game, luck was on our side. Away from him at St. James's Park, look, if that was us, I would be frustrated, because yesterday I did mention it on the live match reaction show, and I said that, you know, that maybe, you know, there was a bit of contact, but it's a contact sport. But then again, looking at it from the other angle, which, funny enough, VAR didn't show yesterday, it did look like there was enough.
Which is weird.
Yeah. That's why people I don't think there is corruption in terms of VAR, and there's a massive agenda. But with VAR, there was not only our game, there was instances in the West Ham versus Chelsea game where they scored the last minute equaliser and VAR overruled that. And there was the Aston Villa Manchester City game where they called an offside decision.
Offside.
Normally they don't do that until the phase is finished. So with VAR, there's going to be a change in terms of who runs the Premier League officials. It seemed like, who was it? Not Clattenburg.
Mickey Mouse?
Mickey Mouse. Well, I think Mickey Mouse was it. Nothing would change at this point because it is a joke of a league. But there is someone who's going to be coming in, and I'll double check exactly who it is. So maybe we do see improvement in VAR.
Dick Emery?
What was that?
Dick Emery.
No, it's a referee. It's a referee that we all know about that's going to take control over refs, but I don't think the changes happen. But there's going to be someone else running the referee board.
What do you make of matey on Match of the Day saying that ex-players should be refs?
I don't know. Honestly, look, I don't know who wants to be a referee. It's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And I know there are some referees that listen to the podcast and they get a lot of abuse, in all honesty. So it's...
Yeah, I've done it, man. Yeah, it's hard.
And
it's hard.
I don't know why, if you're Wayne Rooney, why would you want to be a referee? I guess if you're like a non-league, League Two player, you might want to do that to continue football.
No, if you're Wayne Rooney, all you want to do is manage a team so you can sign Christian Benteke,
exactly. And get him scoring goals again. Get him scoring goals whilst our strikers can't finish. To save
their
lives.
Rooney can't teach him, who can?
Exactly. But it's a very hard topic to actually come to a conclusion about with referees. But look, we'll see what happens. There should be someone else in terms of new officials getting introduced in the Premier League, and hopefully improves from there. But talking about the subs, so that got overturned. And Patrick Vieira finally made the subs. For me, Patrick, these subs were actually, we was discussing it yesterday, but the three subs coming on with Elise, Edward and Nathaniel Clyne, for me, they should have started yesterday. And when they did come on, I don't think we improved massively. There was still an improvement there in terms of we were much better attacking. But what do you think about the subs yesterday and the players coming off and how it potentially did change the games, especially going forward? Because I feel like there was a positive impact from the subs and it was good seeing all three subs come on at the same time. It showed that Patrick Vieira was clearly not happy with how things were going, which is a positive because in the past we've seen managers be happy with just a point, but it seemed like he actually wanted to go for the win towards the end.
No, the subs are fine. See, I agree with you about the three subs being very good. I'm not agreeing with you on the three subs that should have started because, like I said to you in our chat yesterday, they didn't come on to play where you thought they would play. So here's my example. So Klein came on for Mitchell at left back. I don't think you wanted Mitchell to start. Didn't want Mitchell to start. You wanted Klein at right back, correct?
Yeah, I wanted Klein at right back. And if he did play at right back. If he did play at right back, then for me, that would have been better than Wardy because I don't think Wardy.
No, I understand that, but I get all that. My point is they didn't come in and play where you wanted them to play. At least they came in and played where Ayew went to the eight, right? Eze came out. You wanted Eze to start, obviously. So, and obviously, Edouard Mateta, blah, blah, blah. So, again, obviously, you want Edouard to play every game. I get that. So, I understand what you're saying. But what did happen was the subs had an impact. Mitchell had a poor game yesterday, got to be carrying an injury, just doesn't look right. Klein came in, did a good job. Olise on the right side for IU playing there. You know, we all know Olise brings something that's totally different. The flair, the skill, the ability to beat a player, create chances, etc. And we'll get to it now. IU as a number eight was very, very good. Who would have thought it? So interesting enough, in the post-match, Vieira mentioned, and he's right. I forgot all about it, by the way. In Australia, he did play. And so he did play as the eight. I didn't realize that. I wasn't paying attention because obviously they were just, you know, friendly matches, who cares? But he did play in the eight. He played in midfield because we had players that played wide. Like Eboué, for instance, played a lot, blah, blah, blah. So that was interesting. He actually did because at least it wasn't on the trip. So that was interesting. Going forward, are you going to be a future number eight? Not long term, but we're in a position now where the window is now closed. We've got about 13, 11 games until the next window opens. We've got to have someone in there. Mac is injured. Hughes is kind of in and out. Riedewald, who knows? You know what I mean? So if Ayew can play there and do a job similar or better than Schlupp, I'm all for it. And then if you get Elise playing on the right side, now you're talking about having a player on the right side we all want to start, Wilf on the other side. Edouard up top to make you happy, and then an energetic number eight. The thing with Ayew is this, his decision-making on passing isn't great. His energy levels are very, very good, though. I'm not really sure, because I heard the interview he did before the match. He doesn't see himself as a midfielder. He sees himself as a striker. So mentally, can Vieira turn him around? But I give credit to Ayew. He's a team player. Say whatever you want about the man. He's a team player. So if he wants to try it as a number eight, and if it worked for us, I'm all for it.
So Nick.
He had a very good game yesterday.
He did.
Really, I love the close-ups of him getting out of a tight corner, and all you can see is a mass of legs, and somehow Ayew comes out the other side of it. He's very, very good at winning free kicks. Now, the problem is because he's playing out wide, he's winning the free kicks out wide, and we're getting free kicks that you have to whip in rather than being able to have a shot. Now, if you're doing those runs going through the middle and then you get fouled, you're going to be near the semicircle. Does that semicircle at the edge of the area have a special name?
Called a D.
So if he can win free kicks in and around there because of his dribbling abilities, then yes, fantastic.
He's had his
critics, but I've always liked his endeavour.
So let's look at the other side of things. So he's got the energy to press, and I feel like he would suit in that aspect ahead of Jeffrey Schlupp. But then again, with your midfield, I know Schlupp ain't the greatest passer, but do you think Jordan Ayew, sometimes his decision-making ain't great and his passing isn't the best as well? So do you guys think that he could do a better role than Jeffrey Schlupp there? For me, I'm willing to give it a go because, as I said yesterday, you know, Schlupp, he has some good games. He has some games where he's just invisible and we haven't got a clear option to play as like a number eight where Jeffrey Schlupp is playing and where Conor Gallagher was playing. So for me, I would be happy if Vieira gave a go. And it seemed like, based on what he said yesterday, that he is willing to experiment it. And they've done it in pre-season, as Patrick mentioned. Yeah,
but the other thing with him, if he's in the middle, quite a lot of times we were putting balls out wide. And they were very good balls that somebody a little bit quicker than Ayew possibly would have got to. But Ayew, bless him, hasn't got the pace of an Elise or an Eze to actually get onto those diagonal balls.
Nick,
the one thing I think is you could always start Schlupp and then bring Ayew, move Ayew, or bring him onto the sub in that position, because right now we didn't have a sub for Schlupp in that position. So at least you have an option now. Let's say you don't want to start Ayew at the eight, but you bring him on like yesterday, and we just both all agree that he played really well in that position for 20 minutes, you know, up a goal or needing a goal or wanting a goal. Maybe he's good in that position. Maybe not from the beginning, because Schlupp does a good job, you know, for what he's done for the first 60 odd minutes, but then he kind of dies out. He can be a little bit anonymous sometimes, but he does a job as the eight. So maybe that's where you can have him. You have an option now, because we all agree we need a midfielder during the window. We didn't get one. We needed a midfielder. So maybe not to start as the eight, because I don't think I can do it for 90, honestly. But for 20 minutes a match, it's an option that I think that Vieira is going to probably start doing from going forward.
And isn't it good that we've got that versatility? All our players seem to have versatility to be able to play anywhere in the front six, almost.
Exactly. I mean, Jeffrey Schlupp can play up front, left back, midfield. He's played everywhere under Roy Hodgson.
He's not left back. He doesn't play left back anymore.
But he could play there. He has played there before. That's my point.
He hasn't done it in 2 years.
Well, Jordan Ayew's never played in midfield, but we're talking about him being an option there as well. So if it's needed, Jeffrey Schlupp could still go there. He has done it in the past, but of course, he's not a left back, and we all know that. But look, this is interesting. I think Jordan Ayew as number eight, let's experiment it. Let's see how it goes. But as Patrick said, there's two question marks. His passing and his decision making, because we're playing out from the back. I don't know if he's going to be able to do it like that. So enough of the Newcastle chat. Let's get your thoughts and let's go to the listener stuff and get your forward reviews.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, so let's start off with the forward review. Someone called Nick Gossett.
Who's that then?
Exactly. In fact, Nick, you can go say it yourself because it's your forward review. You can have the privileges. Okay.
Endeavour, bloody-mindedness, luck.
Boy, it sounds like a Harry Potter chapter. So
it's only four words.
Exactly. I mean, it's four words, but it's the longest four-word review I've already seen in terms of four words. And Leif Anderson Forehead, always on the show, leaving his comments. Happy with a point. CPFC Barbarian says defensive coach needed urgently. Do you agree, Patrick, in terms of defensive coach? I've seen the set piece coach being mentioned a few times. Do you think a defensive coach is needed as well?
After a clean sheet, probably not.
Exactly. It's probably like the worst time to ask for a
timing
coach.
Yeah.
But then again, if we look at perspective, it could have easily gone wrong. It wasn't like we were fantastic.
No, I get that. But also, we conceded one goal against Brentford. I'll say it because, you know, and I interrupted the four of you. I'm not sure why you did this. But anyway, is that I don't think defence have been our biggest problem this season. Honestly, I don't think it's been a massive problem. Yeah, we gave four goals against Man City. That aside, we've really been pretty good. And we actually, listen, it's just a matter of you just said it, the break. We've got lucky, of course, but I think it's the breaks more. But defensive coach right now, nah, I don't think that's necessary. Yeah. I think we might probably need a striker coach.
Yeah.
Teach Eduardo Mateta to score goals.
Yeah, that would help. That would help as well. Having strikers, you can score goals. It sounds kind of crazy if you're a neutral listening to this. I don't know why. A neutral would be listening to Crystal Palace Newcastle 0-0 review. But we need strikers that can score goals. Mark Ross says, respect away point. Kevin at Kevin A. Steph. I believe Vicente, Joachim, Jordan, Cech. Just those for me today as a forward review. Lewis says, got away with one today. Angry face emoji. Matt says, take that. Thank you. The Mateta Army says, we are very lucky. Paul says, didn't concede late on, which is also a positive as well. Jan says, like Hodgson never left. Gary says, rode our luck today. And that's it for the forward reviews. We've got a few forward reviews. Make sure to send them in after the game on our Twitter page at Back of the Nest and follow all our social media pages as usual. And in terms of Facebook, we've got a few comments. Great all-round team defending on tune yesterday afternoon. Vicente, my man of the match, without a doubt, could have easily lost 3-0. Mitchell form slightly concerned as he seems to be off his game somewhat. Decore was very good as Ayu, who fought hard. Can't fault his commitment and desire. Mateta, putting in a solid display as well. Lacks match fitness with first touch, letting him down often. I'm not convinced that he's a premiership striker. Time will tell and hopefully prove me wrong again. Edouard's introduction proved our goal threat. Having looked at Newcastle disallowed goal, I can appreciate why it was not given as the player impedes our brilliant keeper performance, preventing him from getting to the ball. Have a good week. And that is from Jerry. Some good points there, especially about Tyrick Mitchell. And that's why we might need Tayo Adamarola, who came back from Coventry on loan. Maybe you can put in a spell there.
And the under-18 chap, if he can score goals like that at the highest level.
Fuente. Yeah.
Exactly. So
Future's bright with a left-back, I'll tell you that. Future's very bright.
We've always done well, haven't we?
Yeah, left-backs have been a Palace staple, honestly. But yeah, I mean, it's been a while since Kenny Sansom, but we won't go there.
But look, it's some fair comments there about a few players' performances. And I think Mitchell is the one, for me, that stands out the most because we've seen it last season. He played a lot of games. And Tyrick Mitchell is a player that, in the past, at youth level, he has had injury concerns. And we can't forget that as well. And in a funny way, it was kind of surprising to see Adamarola go out on loan because I felt like he'll be the second option this season because I don't think he's good enough to start first team, but he's still there and abouts and he could back up Tyrick Mitchell. But of course, some people are making the comments that he didn't do at Coventry and they're sending him back. So how could he do it in the Premier League? For me, how I would answer that is just because it didn't work out Coventry doesn't mean that it won't work out in the Premier League. We've seen him play and at Coventry, you know, he's gone away from home.
there was something amiss there. There's something not quite right. Exactly. Because the day before, Coventry were announcing they'd released him, and the day after, Palace were saying they'd recalled him. So which is it?
Exactly,
yeah. And he didn't actually play for them. And they barely played anyway because their pitch was rubbish.
Yeah. So I've still got faith in Teo. I think he could step in for us when it's needed. And just the Coventry situation there, I don't think it judges him as a player. I don't think just because he didn't do at Coventry and they sent him back, it doesn't mean that he ain't a great player. Because in all honesty, you know, Coventry, moving to Coventry from London, it's not the most fascinating places to move to. And as an 18-year-old as well, he might have been homesick. And that's part of it. He has to learn that, you know, this is football, this is brutal. He might learn a lesson there and we move on. But apart from that, gents, anything else that you want
to... Yeah, I'd like to give a shout out to the poor chap who got the train to Newcastle, got off the train. This was on Twitter yesterday. Thought he'd left his phone on the train, got on the train and it pulled out and the next stop was Edinburgh. And he was not going to get back to Newcastle at the earliest at 4:00. And it turned out the train guard at the station, Newcastle station, had his phone. Now, what was funny then was the chap who tweeted this was then caught by away day sleepers, absolutely sound asleep in the stand at Newcastle. So if you have a look at the, I think it's called Away Day Sleepers on Twitter, you'll see him there. It's quite funny. But yeah, big shout out to everybody that went to Newcastle because it's a long, long way to go.
Exactly. Yeah, especially for a 0-0 draw. It's like a 6-hour journey. But look.
Yeah, better than a 1-0 defeat.
Exactly. Exactly. When we went Leeds away last season, and yeah, let's not talk about that.
Oh, fourth minute.
Tuesday night, 94th minute penalty. Mark.
But the thing is, DR, I wouldn't miss it. Do you know what I mean? They're just brilliant. It's just.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You know, it's just good all going together. Burnley was great, wasn't it, when there was about 6 or 7 of us? It's good.
It is great. But look, that's it from us today. Thank you for listening to the show. And thanks in particular to everyone who got in touch today. We read out everything, but we do use it all in the making of the show. So even if your comment wasn't read out, it helped us in terms of planning the show. The preview team will be back with you in midweek to look at next Sunday's match against Manchester United. Until then, thanks again. Come on, you pants.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.